Today on Movie Wallets, we talk about The Odyssey. It's time for Movie Wallers. Hi, this is Joe.
Hi, it's Rashmi.
And Yazdi as well.
Movie Wallers is your weekly dose of film reviews, movie news, and general banter in theatres, on DVD, online streaming, or in the back of an airplane. If you love the movies, this show is for you. Go on, say it.
What?
We're back together.
No, I wasn't going to. I was thinking about it, and I was like, I say that at the beginning of every show. And then I say that at the beginning of every show.
But we are in
It's like a mirror, like one of those mirrors that goes on and on.
But we are in a new location.
We've been here once before.
Once before, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So we're in our house, in our dining room. It is...
Well, we all don't live together, the two of you do.
Well, no, in people's fantasy we might.
Oh, yes.
Mi casa, su casa.
Yes. Yeah, yes, absolutely.
Yes.
So, yes, we're here in our dining room. It is blisteringly hot
this
week.
It's very hot for San Diego, yeah.
We're trying to manage the heat, and we managed to just have our home windows cleaned as well, which
for the first time in years.
2020
COVID. Yeah.
Well, that's not so bad.
Yeah.
And really? I think I know why, because the old guy that used to clean them, Henry.
Yeah.
I think he's retired.
So maybe.
Henry, if you're listening.
Yeah, Henry, if you're an avid Movie Wallers
listener. If you are Henry the La Jolla window cleaner, because that's who he was, we met him at a farmer's market. He used to phone me periodically, and the phone call stopped.
Yeah.
I hope that's not a bad omen. Hopefully he retired. but anyway, that's why. So anyway, why are we talking about our windows?
I don't know. Why are you?
Okay.
Before we get into podcasting, I did want to congratulate Rashmi on Movie Wallers formally. So, Rashmi gave up her corporate job last year.
A year ago, exactly.
Yes, since then, Rashmi was unable, I said, stop working
just
for a
chill,
while.
Right.
No, Rashmi being Rashmi, decided to embark upon many projects, one of which was a children's book.
Yes.
Your Fluff is Enough.
Yes.
And Your Fluff is Enough went live on...
June the 17th
on Amazon, Barnes & Noble.
So any this other is, book platform you may have in your country?
And it's objectively amazing. It's a terrific book. It is. It's in rhyme, and it's so sweet, and it's a message the world needs right now.
So
get your copy of Your Fluff is Enough.
So, yes,
if you have little kiddos, sorry. If you have little kiddos, nieces, nephews, it's a message everybody needs. Your fluff is effing enough.
Yes. And your fluff is enough. Your both fluffs are enough. Aww.
But yeah, it's a delightful little book. What's the target age range?
4 to 8.
So yeah, that's who we're going for. But really, any kid that likes something, joyful, colourful, it's got a great message behind it. We've got some promo clips that I'll link to. You've been speaking on KPBS with our good friend Beth. You have done a radio segment.
Yes.
And the book is out on sale and. Please, if you want to check it out, go to happywiggly.com.
Yes, Happy Wiggly. The website is now up and running. You can come and explore what the farm is and how it works and who the characters are.
Well, let's just, we should assume no one knows what it's about. So what's the story in a nutshell? What's your elevator pitch of Your Fluff is Enough?
You put me on the spot now.
You should know this.
Lenny is a little sheep and he believes that his fluff or his wool or his coat is not enough, and so he travels around a little farm trying on his friend's coats metaphorically and realizes that everything he ever needed was inside him all the time. His fluff was indeed enough.
Yeah, well, very proud of you.
Self-acceptance.
Yes, exactly. Yes,
buy the book. You heard it here. Sorry, I'm pointing at the screen, not the camera. Buy the book, please.
Thank you.
All right. So we're only doing one movie today, and that's
The
Odyssey.
Talking about poems.
Right, I know.
Good segue.
Talking about epic poems.
Yes, mine's not epic.
But we're not going there yet because we did want to, for the first time in a while, do our segment of What is this? Why do we do it? Well, we, like you, sit in front of the TV with a remote control, flicking through and never picking anything, and then picking something that's a disaster and thinking, why did we watch this junk on Friday night?
Well, just I can't find anything. That's the issue. There's so much that there's nothing.
But in amongst the gems is a lot of junk. That's
there is.
That's the challenge of streaming. So, you know, why watch 10,000 episodes of Love Island or Temptation Island when you can watch one of the three gems we're about to present to you? So,
damn right. Yes.
Who wants to go first?
Yes, he goes first.
I'll go first. So I'm going to recommend a movie which is based on a very popular book that I have not read. The book is called Remarkably Bright Creatures, and it's by Shelby Van Pelt. The movie adaptation of Remarkably Bright Creatures has been on Netflix for at least a couple months, and there is one reason and one reason only, or the main reason to watch the movie, and that reason is Sally Field. If you are a fan of Sally Field, if you've missed Sally Field in the movies, there is something so natural and authentic and empathetic about her. I miss her like crazy in movies, and I cast a very accusing finger to all those who don't have her in movies, but you can watch her in Remarkably Bright Creatures. Is it the best movie ever made? No, but this movie made me feel always right with the world. It's really very well done. And if I can hook you into it, the premise is there is an octopus in a zoo, not in a zoo, in like an aquarium.
Okay.
And the entire story is told by the octopus speaking and the characters he sees around. And the main character is a janitor or a custodian played by Sally Field, who kind of cleans around the aquarium in the after hours. And it's about her story and a kind of lost teenager that she comes in contact with. And through the whole time, the octopus is seeing it. And so the whole story is, it sounds bizarre, but it really works.
It sounds very...
It's lovely. It's lovely.
Beatles, druggy.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's very cute. So Remarkably Bright Creatures with Sally Field and Lewis Pullman, Bill Pullman's son, who's grown up. And, yeah. Okay. So that's my recommendation.
Okay, mine is a delightful little movie that we watched a long time ago. I think we've recommended it a number of times. It is the movie India Sweets and Spices, which is just a heartfelt, cute little indie dramedy about a young girl who comes back home from college, I believe, kind of in mid-20s, and just the kind of perils of fitting in into a community and life and wanting what you want and figuring out that you're community that you thought was something is actually something else. Lovely little movie.
Yeah.
Joe.
I just found another one that I was going to choose, so I'll save the one that I mentioned for another day. I am going to choose
Hamnet. No, it's
Hamnet is out, and Hamnet, I know Reshmi didn't work for you very famously, as debated much on this podcast. But I really liked it. So that would be a great choice. But no, my choice that
I just snuck that one in.
My choice is a movie. It goes back a few years, 15 years in fact, to one of our earlier reviews on Movie Wallets. This is like when we were wee little, like 1 year old
movie wallets.
And we were doing this podcast. And I don't think we were doing this segment, but we did review a movie called The Warrior. Tom Hardy, that's right.
Tom
Hardy, Joel Edgerton, Nick Nolte was in
this.
Their
brothers who get into a boxing match.
Oh, that was great.
It's a great film.
That was very good.
I haven't seen this movie for a while, so that this popped up on Prime is super appealing to me. I don't remember a whole lot about the story details, but I know that what ostensibly seems like kind of a meathead movie is a really well-judged character story of these two characters. And again, performances were really good.
Yes.
I think, what it says here on Rotten Tomatoes, to jog my memory, is that while it relies on many cliches, it transcends them with gripping action, powerful acting, and lots of heart. So that movie is Warrior on Prime Video. Yazdi, your choice was?
Remarkably Bright Creatures on Netflix.
And Reshmi, you brought us?
India Sweets and Spices on Netflix.
So there we go. Don't watch Love is Blind again for the fifth time. Watch one of these.
I don't know why you're looking at me when you say that, Joe, because I think you are the Love is Blind.
You know what,
or Temptation Island Brazil or
no.
whatever. Yes.
No, Joe actually does love.
I like Love is Blind. I'll admit to that.
Yeah.
It's not even a guilty pleasure.
You look forward to it.
Early seasons are good. Late seasons. We're not getting into that debate here. Yeah. But certainly avoid Temptation Island. That was the one that we did. We watched one season of that.
And it wasn't that good.
Okie doke, time for our main course then. Shall we talk about The Odyssey?
Yes, let's.
So let me introduce that. I think this might be a movie that is based on the oldest story ever told. And that story, some dude called Homer in 8th or 9th century BC, wrote this Greek poem called The Odyssey. He also wrote The Iliad. They're slightly connected, but... Mm-hmm. Christopher Nolan, since he last made Oppenheimer, decided to take on the entire Odyssey as his next project, and we get to see the fruits of his labor in The Odyssey, which is in theaters right now. It's written and directed by Christopher Nolan, and because Nolan feels a little generous, he is sharing writing credits with Homer. the movie has a amazing star cast. I was listening to one of the podcasts that I often listen to, the Pop Culture Happy Hour, and they said that every person you meet in The Odyssey is a familiar person because so many great actors are in it. So Matt Damon plays Odysseus, the main guy. His wife Penelope is played by Anne Hathaway. His son Telemachus is played by Tom Holland. And then we have a whole bunch of other actors. We have Charlize Theron, we have Samantha Morton, we have Lupita Nyong'o, we have Travis Scott, we have Himesh Patel, we have so many other actors. Oh, and Robert Pattinson is here
Zendaya.
And Zendaya. Zendaya plays Athena, Robert Pattinson plays the slimiest, sniveliest villain.
He's a little typecast there.
He's getting
a little typecast. So the one-liner from IMDb is that after the Trojan War, Odysseus faces a dangerous voyage back to Ithaca, where on the voyage he meets creatures like the Cyclops, the Sirens, and Calypso along the way. This is a big deal of a movie. It's the first movie ever to be shot entirely in IMAX. Came with a lot of fanfare because any movie by Nolan should. We all watched it only a few days ago. What do you guys think about The Odyssey by Christopher Nolan?
So I'm purposely drinking from my OMG mug because OMG, this is epic. Nolan hits or misses for me sometimes. I liked Oppenheimer, but it was so inflated and bloated. This I found to be engaging, loud, beautiful, well judged, a little bit long, but overall I loved it. That's my summary.
Joe?
As we joke about much on this podcast, I'm a big fangirl of Christopher Nolan. Have been really since his Dark Knight movies and Inception and Interstellar and all of those. So, you know, this is always an event for me, a Chris Nolan movie. And in part, I have to kind of temper my expectations. So what I'll say is, I mean, I'm a big admirer of this movie. I did say I found it hard to find love for it in the same way that I found his other works. That's not to say this is not a master craftsman crafting craftily in the most extraordinary way. I mean, you know, he's an auteur. He's very, very clear and ambitious, and he has all these rules around, like, you know, use of film and doing things in camera. So I feel like all of the majesty and grandeur of this movie comes across really well. Yesterday, I'm going to quote you in a blog post that you wrote several years ago, which was, "But where is the emotion, Mr. Nolan?" And I feel like this movie is missing some of the heart that I think it needs to tell its story. It's a very technically well-told story, and that's what Nolan is very good at, the technician. His movies are technical. They fit together well. They're craftsmanship. But I felt that there was just a little bit of love missing from this story. Like, this guy wants to get back home, right? I need to feel that. I didn't feel that. So I'm a big lover of this movie. Don't take that as a no, but warm it up a little. Turn the temperature up, Mr. Nolan.
Yes, Dee.
So I'm not your typical fawning, Nolan devotee. And I've found plenty to gripe about, in his more recent films. But even so, I think there is absolutely no denying, and this is the same word that you use, that I use, the majesty of this film. And I think it's saying quite a lot when I say that this is by far the most ambitious and the biggest movie that Nolan has made. And considering his filmography, that is quite remarkable.
Yeah.
The movie is 3 hours long and almost entirely shot on location. It's the first movie which is shot entirely in IMAX 70mm. And, he chooses again and again to use practical effects wherever possible in lieu of CGI. And just on the basis of those three things, I think it's phenomenal. I think everybody should watch it. I have plenty. This is by no means a perfect movie. I have a lot of complaints. And who am I to judge Chris Nolan? I have no basis. I've not been
Sir
Chris Nolan.
Yeah.
But I think I actually think there's a little growth compared to his previous movies.
Maybe I came in
with lower expectations than you did.
Yeah.
I actually think there's a little bit more emotional heft than in his previous movies, but it's all undone by his obsessive desire in movie after movie to keep going back and forth in time. So when we discuss this, and I'll stop in a second, when we discuss this at the KPBS midday edition thing, Beth Accomando brought up this great point, which is the whole point of Odyssey is it's an odyssey. It's a long journey for 20 years and he doesn't come back and he's tired and he's haggard. But you never get a sense of that because it keeps going back and forth, back and forth, back. So you never get a sense of this long
passage
journey.
Of time.
So it kind of undoes the fundamental basis of the story. But again, I'm not griping. I think if you're a film lover, or even if you're not a film lover, if there's only one movie you see in the theater this summer, please let it be The Odyssey.
Yeah, I agree with you. So I love this movie because it reminded me of movies like Jason and the Argonauts or Sinbad
or Clash of the Titans.
Yeah, those
type of
like...
None of which would have existed without this mythology that came
from exactly.
Odyssey.
300.
Correct.
And I like that mythology. I like that direction. And it felt like the most un-Nolan movie ever that I've watched. In fact, at points I was like, Before Paul Thomas Anderson won the Oscar for the one that he just won
One Battle After
Another. Yeah, prior to that, which I feel was his Tarantino kind of rendition, this almost was like a Paul Thomas Anderson movie to me instead of a Chris Nolan movie.
Oh, interesting.
It just felt like it had that majesty that Paul Thomas Anderson always brings, an epicness. But I did like that kind of mythical stuff. The stuff with the witch and the cyclops and all of those little vignettes. My only thing is that the vignettes were too long. And so we didn't gain anything more in the journey of the story in each one of those little vignettes. So it was a missed opportunity to really kind of... What's the lesson that Odysseus learns through each one of those little vignettes and journeys, right? I was kind of missing that piece. But overall, I think the acting is superb. Now, we watched this on a regular, even though it was shot in 70 millimeter
letterbox
screen. Even then, and I know, Joe, you and I had a very brief discussion about we should have been watching it in my IMAX. Even despite that, the cinematography is mind-blowing. Some of those scenes are like pictures. Yeah. You could take a picture, freeze the frame and take a picture and put it on your wall as a piece of art. So I think...
Hoyt done a great job.
Can we talk about that a little bit? Because, again, as the Nolan purist, I know a lot about you know, behind the scenes. I watch every single behind the scenes making of, featurettes, interviews, blah, blah. But I feel like this decision to film it entirely in IMAX, yes, we get a beautifully shot image, but there's something that once you notice, you can't unnotice. Everything is very close in, and we, you know, the sense of grandeur that you get by pulling out and using kind of a longer, wider lens than is capable with IMAX, you don't get. So everything feels like, especially in the cropped letterbox, and maybe the full IMAX frame, the square IMAX frame that we should probably all experience this movie in, you know, dispenses with one of my big foibles here, but IMAX has very shallow depth of field, right? It's always having to have this big, huge camera in small spaces. And once I noticed it, it started to kind of be like, the purity of the image I get, but perhaps Hoyt van Hoytema could have used a few more tools to elevate the cinematography. This is almost a stubborn decision to say I'm only using IMAX. You know, I agree it's the best picture quality available, but you know, in other movies, in service of the story and perhaps practical reasons, they used other cameras. I feel like this would have benefited from that, because everything kind of felt a little cropped into me. So what should have been big, large, epic, sweeping landscapes felt very closely shot, very tightly shot. So I'm trying to not beat up on this movie. I'm nitpicking because, you know, these are the Nolanisms that I feel like he's gone. You know,
he's indulging himself like Wes Anderson.
That's exactly where I was going to go. This is Nolan being the most Nolan can be. And every director that becomes a cliche of themselves kind of starts to irk me when they do that. So I'm like, dude, do your thing. But like, it's not always a battle.
So our friend Beth has a great point where she's saying that if you watch all the interviews with Christopher Nolan about The Odyssey, he says, I've been waiting to make this movie since I was a little kid, or, you know, in his teens. But then the more you listen to his interviews, it's not like he's a big fan of the Greek poem. He's not a fan of The Odyssey. What he's been waiting for is to make a film which is all IMAX since he was 16 years old. So he is more in love with the format than the content. Right? So it's exactly what...
Oh, interesting. Okay.
Because he wanted to realize this technical feat. And then, you know, there are obviously some, you know, a price you have to pay for that. Lest we get too much on him, I will tell you the things I really think are an improvement. So I think all the Nolanisms are there. There is no opening credits. There is this fussy back and forth in time. You know, critical characters are kind of introduced late in the plot. And there's so many who are just untethered. Like, there's so many characters here. They're just hanging around, lacking any connective tissue with the rest of the plot. But the two things I think are an immediate improvement with this is, one is that I was getting so tired of the loud, clanging music, which drowns out the dialogue. And Göransson has done, you know, movies with him before. Ludwig Göransson, the music composer.
He did Tenet.
He did Oppenheimer as well. And he won the Oscar for Oppenheimer. But I think here... Thankfully, the music does get loud, but it doesn't get clangy and it doesn't drown out the dialogue. So that, I think, is a good thing. The other thing is, you know, Nolan always writes about men, right? Most of his movies. And you can see that he has a problem with... There were some female characters in Interstellar, right? But I think the one criticism against him is that, you know, he cannot write complex female characters. And I think... maybe he's taken it to heart, but I think there's a lot of female characters in this movie. Look at Penelope, right? So if you read, I read Odyssey when I was growing up. Penelope is the long-suffering, you know, wife waiting for her husband. But the way Nolan sees Penelope is somebody who is keeping these, you know, these attackers at bay,
the thugs
at bay. And she's very proud. And when she decides to give up on Odysseus, it's a very practical thing. It's not because she's devious or anything. So this hurts me to say this, but he adds a lot of texture to her. Likewise, the Circe character, if you read the poem, Circe is just seen as this crazy witch, you know, who turns men into animals. In the movie, the way Nolan sees Circe, he sees her as a woman who is trying to be self-sufficient alone in a place where men are after her. And she has to use her powers to protect herself from those men. So different take. I'm sorry, I'm going
and
to shut up.
And there's also something about the environment and sustainability and greed as well, which comes out in that part of the story, which I was quite
And I don't want to ruin
by.
It for anyone. Yeah. I won't say any more, but the Cersei part, I think, is one of the best parts
I
in
agree.
The entire
Very
movie.
Cleverly done.
Yeah.
Exceptionally cleverly done. And then one last thing is about Calypso, right? So Calypso, played by Charlize Theron. Calypso is meant to be a seductress in the movie. She's a siren who kind of lures Odysseus to this island and then against his wishes kind of keeps him for years. In this particular version, the Charlize Theron version of Calypso, she's seen not as a seductress necessarily. She's a person who's dealing with her own kind of immortality. She's sad about him. She likes his companionship and she's not necessarily evil or somebody who is you know, selfishly keeping him against his wishes. So I really like his take on all of these female characters being different from your standard interpretation the Odyssey. So I, to give flowers where it's due, I'm glad that he did that. I'll say one other thing. I think there's a 4 or 5 hour version of this movie sitting somewhere.
Oh, easily.
Yeah.
Because Lupita Nyong'o, who plays Helen of Troy. This whole thing is about Helen of Troy. She's there for less than 30 seconds in the whole movie. Charlize Theron just appears out of nowhere and she's gone. And can I just say one more thing? I'm talking a lot, but I have a lot to say about this. If you read up, I know you've been avoiding everything about the making of the movie. The trailers and all this stuff. So when the cast has been doing the PR for this stuff, Nolan famously does not give any feedback to actors after they've done a take. And Emily Blunt, after Oppenheimer, said, you know, he had a blank face. You never knew if you give a good shot or not. And apparently, there is this whole monologue that Athena, played by Zendaya, does this monologue. And after that was filmed, Chris Nolan said, that's perfect. And all the other actors were there and they were really not pissed. Wow. They were like, how come Zendaya gets like, this is perfect, and he's never said anything to the rest of us? I did not find a monologue that Zendaya does in this movie.
It's cut up, it's some little piece of it.
Somewhere on the editing room floor. So I suspect that he was contracted to deliver a 3-hour movie and just he had to like just horribly chop at things, which is a shame.
I've read that there's a lot more footage that was shot, but I mean, I'm not familiar. I have never read Homer's Odyssey over the years. I know of it, and of course we know all the fables that come from it.
Yeah.
In other popular culture things, but you know, I'm not somebody who is familiar with the story and the layout. But the thing that was very obvious to me, and Rashmi, it's interesting you thought that some of the vignettes were too long.
Yeah.
Because I thought they were too short.
Oh, really?
Like, the whole sequence of the Cyclops, like, happens in mere moments, what felt like mere moments to me. And, I'll say it's some of the most interesting sound design ever encountered. I was just, that was geniusly done. But the thing to me was, it felt like that could have been a 1-hour episode of Odyssey the series. And I would have wanted to spend the time in that environment.
Right.
Because
and so let me respond to that. I think I found it too long because not much happens. They go in the cave, they come out. And so I think had there been more story around each vignette, then it makes sense to have a long vignette. But there isn't much story conveyed about the struggle that Odysseus has to go through to get away from that.
Because there's 19 of them to cram
into
this screenplay.
Right. So I think we're saying the same thing. You felt they were too short. I felt they were too long. And my reason for them feeling it's too long is there's lack of story in them. They seem like they're for the sake of being there because they have to be in there.
Sure.
But then we don't really get to...
We don't get the message.
What happened?
We don't get the three acts of each segment, which you kind of were looking for. Okay,
exactly, which is what I said at the beginning. I wish there had been more of a message around what does Odysseus learn from each one of those little journeys that he has to have that stop him from getting home.
Fair.
I mean, if there's ever a story which is begging to be told a in a linear series. Fashion. No, in a linear fashion, yeah. It's this one.
Yeah.
Because I don't know if the Cyclops happened before, you know, did it happen before Cersei? Did it happen?
Well, we're assuming
after?
It is linear, right?
It's not, because every time they keep going back to the present and going back.
Like, right, but the number of men diminish over time. So, yeah.
I
hear what you're saying, though.
The other thing also is that Odysseus himself is supposed to be a liar and a kind of a person who uses not his strength but his words to get things done. And this version of Odysseus that as written by Nolan is kind of your more classic hero.
Yes.
In that, you know, he seems very noble and he seems very
smart,
but it was kind of I don't know, for me Odysseus is somebody who was kind of very wily and very kind of, he was using people and, you know, he helped you know, get the Helen, the Trojan War horse together, yeah. And so forth. So I think, what did you guys think about Matt Damon as Odysseus?
I thought he was great, but I think he was definitely, and I just watched a segment with Christopher Nolan where he said that although he didn't write the character for Matt Damon, once it was written, he knew he wanted Matt Damon because Matt Damon is one of those actors that brings the audience along. So we trust Matt Damon, right? And I think that's the Odysseus he's cast. And so it's inevitable we're going to fall in love with him. He seems so righteous, and yet the thing that sets off the story is the most unrighteous thing that he happens, in a sense, right? The Trojan War is a lie, in a sense.
I have so much to say. We might run out of battery.
Yes.
Let me just say these two things, okay? One is that I love the fact that Chris Nolan sees all these. So the story has fantastical elements. There are gods and monsters.
Yeah, I love that.
He does not see the monsters as something from a spaceship which have shown up or some weird buggy, you know, four-armed space creature. His monsters, you see all of them, they're very realistic. They feel like they are from the planet of that time. So he kind of grounds the story, I think, which is...
Is that the verisimilitude?
Which is, you know, I really enjoyed that because his Cyclops is not some walking thing. It feels like a creature that could have lived at that time. So, I really appreciated that.
Just going back to Damon, respond. I mean, performances through this were incredible.
Yeah.
I felt like it wasn't necessarily Damon's performance, but I felt that this version of Odysseus, again, not with zero familiarity at all but to me this is like an ancient Greek road movie, right? This is somebody who wants to get home. This version of Odysseus told us he wanted to get home, but I never felt that.
Yeah.
Well, I think that's the point of
the
movie,
point.
Right? That's the whole point of the movie, is that there is a part in the movie, and this, I hope this isn't a spoiler, where he says something was stopping me, or the goddess, Charlize Theron's character
Calypso
says to him, you have been resisting getting home. You don't want to go home, really. And then we find out the reason why.
Then I need to
review
I felt in that moment, because I was frustrated by that.
Oh.
But I'm with you. If I'm writing my own garden variety, or if I'm casting my garden variety version of the Odyssey, I would not think of Matt Damon. I would think of George Clooney or Cillian Murphy or...
Really?
Somebody who has some kind of mischief about them, some wiliness about it. Mm. I don't know, somebody...
Not the Boy Scout kind
of... Not the Boy Scout kind of thing. But it doesn't matter. I mean, Matt Damon, I think, he really certainly seems to show the variness of this particular character. One last thing I will say, and I promise I'll shut up. And it's...
I think that could be a drinking game for this episode. One last thing.
No. This is why we did this as a standalone.
Yeah, we did it as a standalone, right. Yeah.
And this is, trust me, I think Nolan might be one of the most arrogant people on the planet. It gives me no pleasure, you know, praising him. But what's interesting about the movie is is that if you look at the story of the Odyssey, right, it is about a man trying to get home. It's about a man who goes out seeking to make a name for himself, travels the world, and eventually realizes where he wants to be his home. So there's a lot of underlying themes about finding your identity, about realizing that what you want has been with you all the time. There's so many themes to the Odyssey. But the principal theme that Nolan realizes in Odyssey is one of a man feeling guilt at what he has done, right? So he has been responsible for the death of so many innocent lives through the Trojan War. And that guilt is what's kind of driving him down, which curiously, and a lot of people have said that, I'm not the first to say this, curiously was also the theme of Oppenheimer. And so a lot of people see this as a spiritual sequel to the Oppenheimer. But it's, if I have to tap into Nolan's mind, I think he's very worried about the current state of the world and the state of war, which is real, which is, maybe I'm reading too much into it, but it's about, you know, all these people who are waging war and which is resulting in the death of innocent people, what effect it's going to have on them when they realize what they have done. So I really enjoyed that part of it, which is not typically what's associated with the Odyssey.
So it's very interesting you say that, because you know, I read this morning the Economist's review of the Odyssey, and they said in a very somewhat negative way exactly what you said in a positive way. So it's kind of interesting. They refer to it as a very silly adaptation of the of the Odyssey, saying that Sir Christopher Nolan's film is emblematic of its time. In other words, he has introduced these kind of postmodern concepts, and you know, every version of the story that's been told over the years kind of speaks to the world that it's in, not the world that the book was, that the poem was from. And that's what Nolan's done here. So, yeah, I agree. I mean, I take that part very positively, right? These themes are important. And I think, you know, anything that gets us to think about that, I think it does weigh on him. I really do. I mean, you know, the other piece in The Economist, they say, you know, he's a very familiar type of Englishman, right? He's like, he's got a streak of conservatism which goes throughout his films. But in The Dark Knight Rises, you know, he had this whole idea that, you know, he was warning against the temptation of revolutionary violence, right? The whole Dark Knight Rises had that riot scene in there with people who felt they were wrong. So he does absolutely take the things that I think, you know, as he's a person that lives with us in this world, I think he thinks deeply about, you know, the world, and his you know, his four children are involved in this movie. I think he thinks about the world that they're inheriting. So yeah, really, really good, astute observation there.
I did like the kind of the little throwback to the Ramayan with the bow. Bow and the
that's
very, very Ramayan-esque. Which is the holy book of, you know, Hindus.
By the way, did you know that the most anticipated Indian movie this year is the Ramayan?
Yes, and I can't wait.
It's coming out in November,
with
all the big names in Bollywood.
I am dying to watch that.
So there's two people still listening.
Yes.
We
should probably wrap this up.
Okay. Yes, so this was almost like an Odyssey getting to the end of this show, finding our way home. Easily a 9 out of 10 for me. Easily.
Yeah, look, I mean, despite,
it's epic.
Despite my quibbles, this is an extraordinary piece of work. And Nolan movies are always extraordinary pieces of work. And, you know, he just needs to un-Nolan himself a little bit to get back to, I think, some of his more playful inventiveness, right? I feel like he's built a cage around himself of all these rules that he has to follow.
And how serious.
Thou shalt use IMAX you know, in every frame. Thou shalt mess around with time sequences.
Correct.
Thou, like, stop. Just, you know, as you've said, again, I'll quote Yazdi again. It's like, go make a small movie somewhere.
Go make a little indie.
But all of that sounds like I'm grumbling and I hated this movie. I didn't. I can't wait to see it again. I will go to see it on an IMAX screen. I think that's what the movie calls for. And, you know, with that, I give it my 9 out of 10 as well. I loved it.
Everything that Joe said, I think if you're a true movie lover, you know, it sounds like we complained a lot about this movie, but I think just for the technical prowess alone, you need to go see it. just for those individual action pieces, just for the scope, the cinematography, the use of music, which blends period music with modern music, the acting, you know, all of it. I think you need to watch it. And like you said, I'm going to repeat this, you know, if you are coming into this not knowing anything about the Odyssey, you will not have a clue what's going on for the first half an hour.
Yeah.
And even then, like, I really wish they had like a Star Wars type scroll at the start of the movie saying, in ancient Greece,
Yes. This
was the king and this was his wife and, you know, Helen was kidnapped. They keep talking about Agamemnon. Nobody even knows who Agamemnon is.
Well, he was the man with the...
Correct. Yeah, but what is his role in this whole thing? So I think it's still little... He can't help himself, right?
Yeah.
It's all piecemeal and tethered together back and forth in time, and then you're kind of lost. But even saying all that, I think this might be amongst my favorite Nolan movies. It's an 8.5 out of 10 for me, which I'll back down to an 8. But I think it might become a 9 when I watch it on IMAX. I cannot, I can't wait to watch it again.
Excellent.
Done.
Did anyone catch Tom Holland calling
Dad and Mom?
Dad.
Yes.
He once said Dad, once he said
yes.
Mom. I'm like, what's going on? Like,
that took me out of the moment.
Yeah, he should have been at least father and mother.
And mother.
Yeah,
I don't know why, though, right? Because, I mean, there's been no effort made. Sorry, we extended the podcast, but there's been no effort made to kind of, you know, make the dialogue of its time, right? You know,
we've changed everyone's
to make it
accents.
ELB thespian.
They all have American accents.
They've all got American accents,
fine.
Which is strange too.
Oh, yeah, I guess I didn't pick that up, but yeah, the dad threw
yeah.
me at the moment because
there's a big article I think in the about the use of dad and mom in the movie.
Interesting.
And they were saying that in Greece at that time, nobody would have been using the formal father and mother. They would have been using the equivalent of dad and mom in Greek. So therefore, it's justified to put it in. But like you, it yanked me out of the movie right away. I'm like, really? I know they use the F word all the time. The F word is as old as time. But dad and mom?
Yeah, it was like, weird.
Yeah, it was weird.
I just found the accents weird because many of those people were English.
Yeah. I raised that.
We didn't even talk about Robert Pattinson and all of the other. And
Himesh
Zendaya
Patel.
Himesh Patel was
that
excellent.
He was my favorite. Him and John Leguizamo.
Two
of them,
yeah.
Like, right there, Oscars. Himesh Patel was really,
he was
really
very good.
He was the heart of the movie in so
he
many
was.
Ways.
Yeah.
Like, and the conscience of Odysseus.
He doesn't even have a name, I think. He's just the second
in
command. Maybe he does.
Yeah,
but,
he does.
But
brilliant.
He does it
Eurylochus.
Okay.
Sounds like
Elliot Page is in this movie. One last thing. I keep saying this, but I have to give flowers
right,
where
I'll
it's due.
I'll take another drink. Here we go.
I have to give flowers where it's due. Nolan has always been very good with diverse casting. There are people who look vaguely Japanese in his group of, you know, in his soldiers. Obviously, an Indian actor, Himesh Patel, is there as part of his soldiers.
Yeah.
So he's, you know, he's really kind of very good at casting a mix of people of different colors. He's not a purist, like, oh my God, everybody has to be Greece. And there's this whole controversy about Lupita Nyong'o as well. We don't need to get into
Fuck
that.
Fuck you, Elon Musk, is what I'll say to that.
I second that.
Yes.
Okay.
All right, we have to stop talking because we've got other movies to talk about today. Thank you again for listening. We're going to wrap this one up quickly. We shall say too many movies, too little time. A goodbye from me.
And me.
And me as well.
Of film reviews, movie news, and general banter. Movie Wallace.